This episode is sponsored by Grand Beats. Grand Beats is a game audio production studio that provides implementation of adapted music, interactive sound effects, and voiceovers for game developers. They're a team of game audio professionals that have worked on hundreds of successful video game projects such as Diggy's Adventure, Mafia Definitive Edition, Dust Off Z, and much, much more. For a full audio solution for games under one roof, save time and resource by allowing Grand Beats to focus on your development long term as they help with both indie and AAA projects of any genre. Their technology for vast adaptability is what sets them apart from the competition. Don't just take my word for it. Give it a listen and watch.
Headphones on, volume up, and let yourself get into the experience. Let players immerse themselves into your game. Binaural audio, interactive design, adapting to increase game dynamics and players' experience. Crafting a AAA audio experience is a difficult challenge, but not for us, a team of game audio professionals.
Sound badass, right? So go ahead and go to audioxp.net, AUDIOXP.net, and tell them that Game Dev Unchained sent you. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Game Dev Unchained, the number one game development podcast about game development and the lifestyle thereof. I am your host, Brandon Pham, and with me, a special, two special guests, Evan and Jerry. How you guys doing? I have myself on mute. How are you guys doing?
All right, how are you?
Doing good.
Good. So this is the part of the podcast where I actually ask our guests in this specific case about yourselves, where you've been, where you at, where you're heading. So Evan, let's just start with you and we'll talk to Jeremy.
Yeah, so I'm Evan Anthony, creative lead on Genesis Noir, which I made with Jeremy. And we studied new media design at RIT together. And after graduating, we both worked in New York City as doing web design, interactive installations, motion graphics. And after doing that for several years, we decided to make our own game. And we recently released that game just a little more than a year ago. And then since then, we've been patching it because there are a lot of bugs and adding some free DLC and making some new things, which we're excited to share in the future.
Yeah. And I'm Jeremy. I'm the technical lead. And I don't think I have much else to add that Evan didn't already cover.
So you guys met in, early in college then, I assume, or you guys were friends before?
In college, yeah. We were in the same program.
And you were mentioning Evan, the graph design was your major before, before everything?
New media design, which is like fancy high-end websites. It's basically Flash websites back when Flash was a thing. And motion graphics and some installation art kind of stuff.
Yeah, so we learned a pretty broad range of skills in that, but not directly game design. Jeremy ended up being more interested in the programming and development side of things. So after graduation in his career, he kind of focused more on creative technology and creative code. And I kind of like kept going on more animation heavy kind of stuff. So we started from the same education, but we kind of diverged into its complementary skill sets.
Well, this is pretty unconventional. Do you guys have a game art program in the college, or was it just unavailable? Okay.
Now they do.
Now they do.
Yeah, now RIT has a...
I don't think they have a specific game art program. Everyone I know who's gone into game art has always said they've come from like illustration or kind of just traditional arts. That's usually what works out best, I found.
Yeah. So yeah, making our first game, we had never used Unreal before. And
I'd use Unity in a few projects, but
nothing like a commercial game release, which is a very different beast than making like a web experience or interactive installation. So yeah, we learned a lot and made a lot of mistakes, and we're pretty naive, but we pulled through and released our game.
Yeah, well, let's talk about let's talk about like these different you know, the start of it, like how long was the process, how long did it take, the inception of it, was it always an idea upon graduation that you guys would go in and do this?
No, like you came into it later.
We were both interested in games, and we knew that about like each other. And after we graduated, Jeremy and I would take time off from like freelancing or doing work and like just make little projects. Like we bought 50 pounds of dry ice and spent a weekend like making little short experiments and short films with that material. And we're just very interested in mixed media, and that interest kind of like naturally led to games, like as the kind of the zenith, right, like mixing all different medias. I read this really great book called Cosmo Comics, and I was really inspired by this collection of short stories, and I kind of thought it made me think of this idea that the Big Bang sounded like a film noir, and that this could be a story in the kind of language and narrative style of Cosmic Comics. And I showed that to Jeremy. You were really into
it.
And this idea kind of like was a perfect synthesis of our different interests. Like, Jeremy, you're so into jazz.
Right.
You've turned me on to so many things. And I'm really interested in film and animation. So yeah, it just seemed like a perfect opportunity for us to combine our interests and strengths.
It's definitely the vision is very unique. I mean, even without sound and the jazz and musical elements, obviously a big part of the game, but like visually it's very compelling. It's very different than like the noir times of 30s, 50s. It has like a good mix of it. It's very appealing upon first glance. The indie scene has been very innovative in the game industry, as you guys are well versed in, right? But you can fully understand that for something to stand out, even in that crowded market, it's amazing. And I think you guys did just that, especially for a first title. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, this is all we could do. Like we couldn't, this is very much our strengths.
Yeah.
Like we could not make
a realistic
game or a more traditional looking game. We would really struggle with that. So I'm really thankful that tools like Unreal are getting accessible enough that, people who haven't been immersed in that in game development could pick these tools up and learn them and make something that plays to their strengths.
Yeah. I mean, it's a strength to you guys to be able to kind of complete games. I mean, I know a lot of, I come from the AAA space, and even with those guys who've been making games for a decade or so, they don't really follow through. I mean, it takes a lot of grit to kind of sit down with a friend, especially, I don't know if you guys went into the full time. Were you guys like balancing it with the day job? Like, what was that scenario to
so we
to
had
completion?
Yeah. We had done freelance work just on our side for like a couple of years, like 2 years. And we take occasional breaks to work on like little prototypes for the game. And eventually we decided to take like a year off, I guess. How long did it take to make the vertical slice?
Yeah, we were working on that probably 80 to 90% of the time. We still took on some freelance gigs, but we transitioned to doing mostly working on that project. yeah, there was a couple of years where we were just developing the idea and like doing little prototypes, getting feedback, trying to figure out how we're going to pitch this idea, communicate it.
Yeah.
And then once we made the vertical slice, we showed it to some publishers at GDC and they got a lot of, you know, positive feedback. And
the GDC before the candy or?
Yeah, this was 2017.
Yeah, it was 2017.
Yeah.
Last few times where it was full. I think it was the year before, two more years before COVID. Right? So my question is, I don't want you guys to gloss. I do want to ask like the specific parts of, you know, because the hardest part is the beginning in balancing a lot of things. You guys were saying you were freelancing at first and in between, like what exactly was the periods here? Are we talking about a 3 month period and then 1 month on, 3 month off, 1 month on, and then finally, is it a year in? Where it's like, all right, we can take a year off and concentrate.
So with your work, Evan, you could take gigs that were like a weekend for animation or something, right? Like I remember you doing that.
Well, yeah, the precise timeline is the idea. We had it in 2013 and we're kind of sketching on it for the next kind of couple of years. And probably taking 1 month, 2 months over the course of each year to like dedicate our time to making a pre-visualization or a prototype or something. And then in 2016, we went towards making our vertical slice. And I think, I took off, I was working probably 1 or 2 months out of that time. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I went full-time
for the
project in 2016.
Was that a two-man team the whole time? You guys get contractors on the side for help?
At the beginning, we brought on some freelance friends to like help us do concept art.
And the logo and stuff.
Yeah. And then once we teamed up with our publisher and did our Kickstarter, we had a better idea of what kind of scope and how big of a audience we might have for the game. Then we kind of assigned our budget and we brought on several developers to build like specific tooling and the interface. And we continue to work with our freelance pals to make animation and art. And then of course we teamed up with our musician Skillbard, who did like a phenomenal job throughout the entire course of development.
That was before the vertical slice, so pretty early. Yeah.
Well, I imagine there's a lot of vast education throughout this process for you guys, but you guys still were able to kind of shift this out in a very timely manner. How was that like whenever you guys hit setbacks where you didn't know a specific way of doing things in the game? I know you guys were playing to your strength, but there was obviously things that you guys didn't, you had to learn on the job, right? How did you guys overcome that so quickly? And it's still like, what was the longest period where you guys felt like, oh, we kind of hit a wall here. We need to figure this out. And then,
I mean, I don't think there was much, any kind of wall. It was mostly like, cause I knew like, because we had the source code of Unreal Engine, if there was something that was not working or weird, then I could at least try and figure it out. And there's a lot of online resources and people that I've met just through networking that we were able to like consult with in terms of helping us like solve problems.
Yeah, and we partnered with Plastic Fern to help us to Xbox and Switch, and they helped us with controller and certification. And we partnered with localizers to help us translate. So, and then our publisher gave us a lot of guidance as well. Mm-hmm. But I'd say the most challenging thing was towards the end of the project, because like I think we were underestimated the amount of time QA, like just playing through each of these different builds for each of the different consoles, you know, checking all the languages, debugging as a small team while you're trying to like add the final bits of polish and like implementing all the audio, especially with our musicians, because Skillbard just they like everything had to be perfect and amazing. Like I was like, oh yeah, we'll just reuse this sound. And they're like, nope, we're gonna make like a bespoke thing that is perfect for this animation. And I was like, okay, thank you. And then, you know, having and going in and putting all those sounds in and checking them all. I definitely underestimated that part.
So was it roughly overall? I think you mentioned this, but was it 2.5 years, 3 years overall from inception?
Well, we released in early 2021 and we finished our Kickstarter in 2018.
Yeah.
So it was like basically 4 years of full-time development. Mm-hmm. And then
1 year.
Let's say 1 year over the course of several years of like tinkering away as freelancers.
The Kickstarter thing. So that was when Kickstarter was, I always mix up my time with Kickstarter because there was a really hot period, obviously.
Yeah.
Slowed down a bit and then it's kind of stable now, right?
Yeah.
Where was that in 2018, 2017?
Definitely not super hot.
Yeah.
Like it was a very stressful experience. I'm grateful that we did it because, we had no experience like communicating with an audience or doing like building an audience and
zero, basically no one coming into that. Right.
Yeah.
So it really forced us to like write a monthly blog post and reflect on the things that we were making and involve other people into our project and get feedback from them. It was definitely a challenge we squeaked by in the last couple of days. Which is, I think, common. A lot of people have that experience where it's like,
building an audience from zero.
Yeah, it was like flat and then. Yeah. And
so was it because you guys were sharing screenshots of the game? You were doing kind of like little dev diaries? What was the initial buildup where you started to have traction to?
Yeah, I mean,
a 1 month campaign where finally you had the audience? Okay.
Yeah.
That was supporting it? Yeah. So it was mostly that, just engaging and
we had signed up with our publisher previously and they helped us manage that and reach out to people and it was just trying to find out other projects that were live at that time and collaborating with them. And like we teamed up with some video game socks and they made socks out of our characters and we hyped them up.
Yeah.
So it's like all these like supporting one another.
What you do at Kickstarter, like you'll get a bunch of emails from everyone else running Kickstarters around the same time. You're like, hey, let's synergize some stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it doesn't make sense, but sometimes it does.
Yeah.
So were you guys being picky or were you just like, hey, we're kind of new to this. We'll use our common sense or we just say, hey, let's see how the dice rolls.
We were pretty picky. Yeah.
Like if a project looked relevant, like a similar audience, then I think it makes sense to share it. But if it's like a completely different kind of project or
quality levels in there.
Yeah, then it's not, I think, helpful for us or the other project.
So I'm sure you guys did your research before that. There's just like X amount of days. Mm-hmm. I think it's the first 24 hours where you kind of know if your campaign was going to be a success or not, just based on trajectory, right? Was that tracking for you guys or did you guys have to do something midway to kind of up it to make sure you crossed?
I don't really remember.
How did you guys settle with the campaign goals? Did you have like a certain budget in mind?
Our budget was our like completion was like 40,000 and I think we got like 45
or
something like that. So we got into our first little kind of like reward, but that was at the very last day.
Yeah.
I think the first when we launched the project, Kick Tracker, which is a good website which kind of predicts like if your project's gonna be successful was it said we were gonna be successful, but it wasn't going to be like a blow off kind of thing.
That's the kind of thing with Kickstarter. It's either you just make it, you don't make it at all, or you're really, really successful.
Right.
Like there's no middle ground, really.
Yeah. So yeah, it was difficult. I'm glad we did it. And so much of like, because we were so new to all this, like many of the things that we did in the beginning of the project were just important for us to kind of take on the responsibility and treat this like a business rather than just a side project or a hobby.
Yeah.
Like one of the things that we did that was very valuable was we entered a contest, which I don't think is available anymore, but New York State had a indie game challenge. And
we could do like a business proposal.
Yeah. So you create a pitch, a mentorship plan, a business plan. Like you really document your project very well. And we ended up winning that. And the like having to go through and write a business plan and like actually outline our audience, mm-hmm. how we're going to reach our audience and what the risks are in taking this project and being honest about like what our, you know, what risks are and how we can mitigate them. It was very important.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was actually going to follow up with that. Exactly that. I mean, were you guys leaning on professors, colleagues that have done this before throughout the process?
I mean, that's what our publisher,
some of the sources.
Because our publisher has a lot of experience in that stuff over years at other AAA places, other consoles, other game companies, et cetera. So that's kind of where we got a lot of insight from.
And you had been reaching out.
Yeah, and I've been on Twitter, you know, just meeting people in the indie game scene, just getting advice in that department was also super valuable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it helps because, like, if your game looks good in a GIF, then you get immediate attention on Twitter if you just, like, ping some people. So that's kind of our strength is that we can show a thing off really well. So that definitely helped.
Yeah. And we definitely credit co-op mode.
Yeah.
People who made Nog. Mm-hmm. Salim there, like, really mentored us. Mm-hmm. And said, like, he was the one that pushed us to go to GDC, and we like bought tickets a couple weeks
before. Yeah, like 2 weeks before. And yeah, Salim was like, we have two bunk beds in our hostel. Yeah. You can have them. Get over here and pitch your game.
Yeah. We were like, okay.
Yeah.
And was GDC where you met your publisher? When did the publisher kind of
yeah, come? Well, I had emailed someone in the indie game scene who was a scout for a publisher. They're not there anymore, but they were at the time. And I emailed her just asking for a bunch of advice. And they were like, yeah, well, here's the answer to your advice. But also, you should go to GDC and we're going to schedule you a meeting with this publisher. So we met with like a whole bunch of people there. And they were all super supportive. And the good thing about the publishers was that, you know, if you weren't a good fit for them, they tell you, like, they recommend you to someone else and they tell you who else to talk to and give you emails. They're like, oh, here, I'll introduce you to these other people. If your game was, you know, good. Because, mm-hmm. like, we, like, talked to Devolver and they were like, oh, this looks great, but you're not, like, it's not our kind of thing, which is obvious.
Yeah.
You know, they were not an arcadey kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So they were like, oh, no, you should go talk to these other people. And, you know, it was just kind of nice to get a kind of validation.
Yeah, yeah. But we found the whole indie scene very supportive. Mm-hmm. And people are eager to mentor you. And if you ask and if you, you know, you show up with the work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there was a period where publisher was kind of like an evil thing that's always take, 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 take. But thankfully, that's evolved, especially because of indie teams like yourselves being so innovative. Because, like, just a few years ago, indie publishing is like, what is that, right? It sounds kind of scammy, right? It's like, why don't you? I'm making all the work. Why can't I just do it myself, right? A through Z, like Steam Greenlight and stuff. But because the indie scene have grown and the games are a lot more complex, right? More like akin to PlayStation 2 days, where they were smaller teams, but quality work, that the publishing have become, like you guys have experienced, it seems like more about mentoring and working in line with you guys. When you guys went to GDC, was it basically coming with a trailer, with a prototype? Was it 6 months in, or how far?
Yeah, so we had like made a Vertical Slice over like 8 or 9 months or something.
Yeah. And we had a trailer.
Yeah, we had a trailer that you had edited. We had music and sound from Scobard. We had the business plan. We had a pitch deck. And we, the important thing I think we had was that we had like tiered pricing or tiered budgets.
Or scope.
Yeah. So if we got like $100,000, we would build this. We got $200,000, we would build this and this. If we got $300,000, we'd build this, this, and this. So that was good.
The response was obviously pretty good.
They liked that aspect a lot because it showed that we had thought about, you know, how much does this actually cost? And the numbers were, you know, accurate. So that was, I think, a big benefit.
Yeah. Luckily, our background coming from like advertising and kind of commercial art world is where we got really good at making pitch decks.
presentations-wise.
Yeah, a lot of people really complimented us on our presentations. So we had a very janky.
You can see that.
We had a very janky vertical slice that was like, you could get stuck on things.
And yeah,
it's just like
bugs.
We ended up like refactoring and redesigning so much of that early content that we made. But I think like our publisher and people that, you know, they could see like, okay, these guys have a lot to learn, but they're like thoughtful and we see that they'll get through it, you know, with some help.
Yeah. They got good bones.
Yeah.
We can build from this. Well, I want to ask you guys this, like, you know, I come from an art background. I went through a game art and design. Yeah, we had pitches here and there, but like, it sounds like you guys had a lot more serious pitching going on. What worked for you guys that you guys felt set you guys apart? Because, you know, when we think of pitching, it's like, all right, so, and this is the number one thing that people tell us, don't go to PowerPoint. It's like, all right, screenshots, trailers, like, what should I be showing? What was your guys' process to kind of end up? Because it sounds like you guys did really well with the pitching.
Yeah.
It was a lot of work. Like,
yeah,
a lot of bespoke drawing and like laying out what the plot would be and what the characters are.
And this would be on a screenshot after screenshot while you guys are standing there explaining slide by slide, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Together like 100 slide presentation and Google Slides. And like trying to really be
economical,
so that each slide has a very simple concept that it's conveying, but there's some hook to it. Like
you're telling a story.
Yeah, but you're like constantly putting little hooks of like that. At this stage, we haven't made the thing, and the thing, the game that we're trying to create, we're very flexible with. But we want to create little scenes that let the viewer of this pitch kind of inject identify with what particular thing that they might find compelling. So like we had a section on like gameplay, and we had created some prototypes and we documented those with GIFs and texts which describes the thing that we had made, but we also sprinkled in just like one page slides with things that we hadn't made but we wanted to. Mm-hmm. Performing a Japanese tea ceremony. Mm-hmm. Or like hunting a stag through a primeval forest, just like one sentence kind of ideas, which we didn't get into specifics about, okay, how is this gonna be implemented, but trying to leave enough open that people can, their imagination could be stoked.
You guys find yourself having to, because you've done a lot of those before you got the publishing deal, kind of tailoring to the person you're talking to, like how much time did you really have to, you know, meet the person and like, nah, I know this, their appeal is this, you know, let's emphasize on these slides versus others. It sounds like you guys would know that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's definitely one of the most important things to do is also make like branch off your pitch into variations, which satisfy the the needs or the question or answer the questions that a particular person might you know be interested in. But that said, I think since we were so inexperienced, we didn't necessarily have the like context to know specifically a lot about each of the individual publishers. So yeah, our pitch decks for them were customized a little bit, but not significantly.
Later, when we were pitching like console people and stuff, that was all.
Yeah,
we would do bespoke decks for each person we were talking to.
Yeah.
How different were they compared to the other publishers?
It depends. Like, it depends on what our goal was. If like we pitched to Microsoft, I guess, and our publisher did that pitch. I don't think we did.
For Genesis?
Yeah. For the Game Pass thing.
Is that normal? The publisher kind of taking you guys' pitch and...
Yeah, I mean, in some... For the first time, I guess.
So our Genesis Noir, Game Pass licensed Genesis Noir. That was part of a larger deal that Xbox did with our publisher. So...
They licensed several of the publisher's games, one of which was ours.
Yeah.
So publisher had a larger pitch that we weren't a part of. Yeah. We weren't directly.
Oh, I see. So they had a deal before, and you guys were included as part of like this tender for one deal. And then we want to take this as part of our pitch today.
Yeah.
Yep.
Interesting. How involved were you guys with that? Just from results and
not
stuff,
at all.
We provided as much,
info that they needed
for them.
Yeah.
And then here's a bunch. And they said like, okay, these, really we just need these five slides or whatever. And we weren't involved in the actual meeting with Xbox.
No.
Were there key meetings that you guys felt, because now you guys are full blown game developers at this point, right? Were there meetings that you guys felt like was transformative of making a huge leap in understanding the industry, the business, especially of the industry? And what were those meetings where you felt like, oh, okay, now I have a better grasp?
Early on, we were like getting started doing console ports and stuff. I think we had a bunch of meetings where it's like, here's how console development works.
Yeah.
Here's what certification is.
And meeting with the Unreal guys.
Yeah.
We were lucky. Unreal gave us
and
professional
grant.
Support.
Yeah.
So, they met with us with some senior engineers, and they helped us figure out a game plan to do our custom animation system. That's more your ballpark, but for me, that made me feel like okay. These guys are taking us seriously, and I have a better idea of what is involved in the engineering.
Right. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was mostly just like, oh, I've never done console development before, and figuring that world out was super interesting. Because, I mean, I've done, large-scale engineering projects before for other big companies, and the problem-solving is pretty much the same kind of stuff. It's just now... I guess the big difference was you're selling a product to a client, like a big company, if you're making something for them, versus selling a product to the general public. Mm-hmm. That I think is kind of the big transformative kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, the main thing about the meetings with our publisher was that basically every time we had a meeting, it was like, oh, great. These people have our backs. They know what we're doing. They understand stuff. It was great to just always talk to them. And we were always on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah, and they also, especially leading up to release, we had several conversations with Chris from Fellow Traveler, the CEO of the company, and about what the expectations for a release is going to be.
Dealing with the emotional impact of it, dealing with press.
Yeah, and because we hadn't spoken with press before. And
we hadn't done interviews.
Basic things. Yeah.
Well, you guys are doing great now. I didn't know how involved these was. So this is quite news to me because, obviously we're a game development podcast. I've introduced and talked to a lot of game developers of all different places. But I really never dived into the publisher-developer relationship, and it sounds so evolved from just, I think the last time I was talking to Indie Group was a year ago or a year and a half ago. And it sounds, there's a lot more mentoring than I expected, where they really walk you through everything. Like, what were the kind of things they were preparing you for, the press releases?
It was mostly just like the press stuff. Like, here's what the press is going to ask, avoiding, like, we got bombarded by like random people on Steam asking for keys.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, these people are scammers.
Kind of scam.
Yeah. And like checking Steam forums, responding to reviews. Here's like the providing a kind of framework for the language of how you deal with customer service. And like, how do you triage all the different issues that come up during release?
How do you schedule doing patches?
Yeah.
Especially when consoles take another extra week to patch, do the recertification stuff, all that kind of stuff. Another, I guess, kind of thing they helped with was just the sheer amount of assets you need to prepare to go on any digital storefront.
Yeah.
Where everyone wants a different size thing, a different number of images, and, you know, tailoring that to look as good as possible on every platform was a lot of work.
Yeah.
The expectations that you guys going in, I think about like the first day you guys put a business proposal of like purely like thinking about the game, obviously we're developers, creatives, right? And all these extra factors about shipping a game, right? All these things that you guys have to learn, talk to the press, certification.
I knew that was coming.
Like, yeah.
Because, I mean, I've had friends who have been in AAA and been in indie games way before we started making a game. So I knew what the process was, and I knew that was coming. But you don't think about it until it actually has to happen.
Right, because there's so much on
the point. I mean, you're still making the game. You have to have the game made. So it's not, there's no thinking about, like, oh, I'm going to have to cert later. And I mean, now I know what to avoid trying to put in a game to avoid cert issues.
What are those, if you can give some quick ones?
Internet or things.
Internet things?
So. Yeah, if you put anything in your game that needs to talk to a server that isn't owned by the company that you're doing that isn't owned by Microsoft or Sony or whatever, then there's this whole rigmarole that you have to go through. We didn't do any of that, but it's on my mind for this new project in some small ways. And then also just a little localization is another big thing. It's just like knowing like, oh, this is going to be difficult for the translators to deal with. That kind of stuff, I think, is good lessons learned, I guess.
So the language thing, the localization is stuff that I think as a developer, I kind of take for granted, right? It's that other group will take care of it. But as an indie, you don't have the luxury for a lot of things. So are there like key languages? Like how many languages that do you guys have to kind of
prepare
for? Nine?
Yeah. I mean, once you do one, they're all basically the same in terms of programming wise. But setting that pipeline up, because if you use more than one localization company, then they're all going to give you data in different ways. They're all going to use your spreadsheet slightly differently. If you don't know how to set a spreadsheet up that you're putting all your text into, then you have to write a bunch of code and scripts to like translate that spreadsheet into whatever format your engine's using. So there was a good like month of figuring all that out.
Yeah. And like we also didn't anticipate localizers coming to us with questions. So they each kind of like had their own format for asking us questions and for clarification or reporting like a text rendering issue when they play tested. So because we didn't think of that and we didn't have like a nice survey or spreadsheet for them, we had a whole bunch of different places to look, and I think that definitely slowed us down too.
Talking about slowing you guys down, so if you guys don't mind me asking, what was the original estimate where you guys felt, Evan and Jeremy at the beginning, when you guys were in a ship to the actual four, you said 4 years, right? So what was the how much all this added to that?
It was one extra year than we planned.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad.
So
it's actually really good. Yeah. Yeah. Usually, I've been told it's like twice. Yeah. Like everyone's just like always 2x. If you think a game will take 2 years, it will take 4 years.
Yeah. But when we first had the idea, it's like, oh, making a game and releasing a game, that will take no time. But
I never had that relationship.
That's how I
get the proof.
Like, I'll release this game before my 30th birthday. And
right.
There's no.
You can do all types of things.
Yeah, didn't hit that milestone.
No. But originally was February 2020.
Yeah.
Was what we said in the Kickstarter.
Yep. And then we were like, okay, we're going to aim for like a July, I think, or August.
Yeah.
And then we missed that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be like, okay, holidays.
Yeah.
We're going to get it in before the holidays.
Yeah, like October, November.
And then that didn't happen. And then it felt like we were going to be close to that, but
we didn't really make it.
And then it felt like we had a bunch of time. It was like, okay, but then we're sitting on this for a bunch of time.
Right.
But really, we needed that to like put in the polish and debugging. And we still released with
a lot of bugs. Still needed another like 3 months.
Realistically, yeah.
Yeah.
Just to debug and play test.
Yeah. Our Steam reviews early on got hit somewhat
very
hard.
Understandably.
Yeah. I mean,
because we also had issues where like we had fixed bugs, especially for like Xbox and Switch, but we couldn't get them to our players for like Switch was had an old build for the first like 2 weeks or month.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Before we could get the late, like the build that we launched with on Xbox and Steam. So yeah, like the first couple days of release was so strange.
Yeah.
Like my personal experience was like
each day was like a week.
Felt like an actual week.
Yeah.
Because I was sending out Kickstarter keys to our backers, and I was responding to customer support. I was responding to the press. I was checking, you know, Twitter for, you know, feedback and trying to also fix bugs.
Yep.
And yeah, it was just, I mean, I slept, but.
Yeah, we slept.
We slept, but there was just so much input, so much
stress.
Yeah, coming into. And so much emotion and you know, like feelings about like releasing this thing finally after working on it for so hard for so long. It was a very strange experience.
You guys feel, I think I know the answer to this. Do you guys feel at some point that it was easier to quit during the process?
No, I mean, well, we had a contract for our publisher saying we're finishing this.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
And I mean, no, there was never anything that sucked enough to be like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. It's like, okay, are we going to disappoint people by being 6 months late?
Right.
Or however late, you know?
Yeah. So the delay, like the publisher was always fine with the delay. We always had to like spend a day wrangling a Kickstarter message to be like, hey, we know we said this, but now it's actually this and it's for these reasons. And the reasons are always valid. And it was, you know, we're adding controller support, we're doing this, we're doing that. And we also had some stuff that we couldn't even announce. So we were like, you know, make up some little things. But mostly it was around controller support and accessibility kind of things. Remappable buttons, also the kind of things that we were adding.
Yeah.
But we were adding them because they were part of CERT for Xbox, which we didn't announce until, it was for Switch that we didn't announce. And there was also performance fixes for Switch.
Yeah.
I think we had done Switch and we probably would have released like back in the holidays.
Yeah.
Because that was the main source of things, was just making that game not die on that console.
Just to kind of go back to asking like specific developer questions. As you guys kind of going through this first time, learning as you're going, developing the game, going back to the comfort, it's like, all right, I know how making the game is, and I'm discovering tools and tech stuff that might be new to me, but it's exciting, it's fun.
The big thing for me was like figuring out what the engine has available for us to use. There's still times now where I find out new features of Unreal Engine that would have helped us in the first game that existed, but I had no idea about. So I ended up building my own solution that was like 10 times worse than Epic's. So that's still a weekly occurrence for me.
I guess my question to that is like, if you were to look at your time in percentages, right? Like just for those 4 years, how split were you guys? Was it 50% working on the game, 25% the other 50% doing all these other things that you guys didn't really plan for, right? Just promoting, answering emails, fixing bug is part of development, so that counts. Talking to the publisher, getting ready for a new presentation or whatever the case. What was your time split if you look at a typical day? That what that looks like.
It's hard to quantify.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was definitely more for me than Jeremy.
Yeah.
Because I made the trailer, and I also we released it was like a collector's edition where I made an art book, mm-hmm. and I made Kickstarter rewards ended up being a lot of work. So like if I guess with the trailer, Kickstarter rewards,
10-15%.
Yeah, something like that.
15% promotional stuff.
Yeah. But like ultimately
it was all valuable anyway.
It was all valuable. Yeah. Like all that stuff kind of fed into the actual experience and product. Because we were trying to be very deliberate about everything that we make, like either teaches us a lesson or teaches us about the characters or is like directly something that we can put in the game. So like for our announcement trailer, like it starts with a shot of the main character falling into the Big Bang, which is like this expanding gunshot with stars in it. Mm-hmm. The character like falls in and he like his hat falls off and he like reaches and grabs it just before he gets sucked into the universe. And I had that shot in the game, but it was like very limited animation. And for the trailer, I was like, okay, I really want to animate this well. And so that was work that I did for the promotional trailer, but ended up in the game. And I got to have this, one part of the game a little bit more polished.
For the promotional part, I guess I just want to ask you this then, to call it, kind of follow up on that. Knowing what you know now, like how deliberate are you when you guys are working on your next game to kind of make promotional kind of feed into development? Because that's the biggest issue with any type of, especially AAA, right? Because a lot of those promotional have often been throwaway. It's like, all right, and indie groups are especially kind of finding themselves in that throwaway work just to promote and then no one's working on the game, right? So how did you find like a nice rhythm there where you can feel like, hey, going forward,
all of the promotional work in the engine for the most part?
So
it was all animated in the actual game. We did just big renders where you would just screen cap, at 1080p. The switches for each trailer or true or false. So there were like just gameplay parts where we would just like turn switches on and off. Or we had like a mode that would make the cursor bigger and all this other kind of stuff. So I think that was a good way of being honest in that kind of sense.
Yeah. It's also just very important to think about all that promotional stuff.
Yeah, and the timing of it.
Yeah. And this is also from our background, like as making a promotional stick or a movie or whatever. Like, and we're also very interested in like title sequences.
That's
one of the things that was emphasized in our studies. Like so much about experiencing a piece of art or an experience or just any kind of product or experience is how it's framed to you and what your expectations are when you go into it. And particularly for our game, which is such a esoteric, heady, abstract concept, it was very challenging to like communicate what the scope of what you do in this experience, because conceivably it's the entire history of the universe.
Right.
So like trying to lead people to kind of have reasonable expectations and then be surprised by how we deviate from what we tell you you're going to be doing is challenging. And we definitely noticed that there's a portion of our players where like they wanted a very traditional film noir pulpy story, And that's not really the story that we tell. And so I think we could have done our promotion and communication better. It's something that I want to be even more thoughtful for our next game.
In the promotional stuff, was this a timeline kind of given to you by the publishers? Like, hey, by 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, was that given to you guys and you guys have to create things for that? Or was it collaborative? What was, if it is a timeline thing, what was that timeline?
We had like a schedule, a rough, like they didn't do anything until I don't know, 6 months before release, I guess.
Our initial release date.
Yeah. And then like there were like special events around like conferences and showings at different cons and things that we'd always make stuff for. And we always made a lot of material for our Kickstarter backers.
Did you guys always go to those or was one of you?
I went to PAX East 2018 and IndieCade and a few others, I think. So we always had a lot of material to make for that.
Yeah, we would often target like our promotional stuff around opportunities that our publisher would, you know, like find for us. Mm-hmm. Like we got a spot in the E3's PC Gamer show.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh yeah, we need to make a trailer for this.
Yes, we made a bespoke, specific trailer for that. That was like a month.
Yeah.
And then we made a different one for the release. And then we made another one for the DLC that were released.
Yeah. And another one for our album.
Yeah. It's just a lot of material.
Yeah.
You two guys were the only ones doing all that stuff. It's so much work.
It's fun for me.
Yeah.
That's our background. So
yeah,
I like
it. Yeah. It helps. And
it's nice to make stuff that isn't going to be used by anyone. So you could just make it just has to look good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looks good. That's all that matters. It's the video or GIF, you know.
And the nice thing about making a video game is we just have so many assets and tools and things to play with. And like so much of it, we can't put in the game because playtesting, stability, just pacing the scope of the project. But like I have all these assets and like I have systems for like manipulating them and like, it's just fun to play with them. So yeah, the marketing stuff is an opportunity to like take all those models that you just see in this one scene and like they're really cool, but like in our album trailer, I just like put them in I spawn copies in a ring and it just like rotates and it's just graphic and it looks cool. To actually make all those systems by hand or make those assets for the first time, it's a substantial amount of work. But for me, like I have them all on.
Yeah.
I just, it's an opportunity to like bust them out again, give them the love that they really deserve.
Definitely. Was there an event that especially made an impact for you guys where you guys felt like, oh, okay, this is next level. People are really hearing about this. Twitter's blowing up right now.
And E3 was pretty huge for me at least.
Yeah.
Cause I remember like paying attention to E3 when I was a kid and it's like, oh, only the big games get to go there. I mean, like I wasn't at the event, but I watched it a lot and it was just pretty surreal just to be like, oh, yeah,
have the announcer.
Yeah. Right.
You know, be like,
yeah, and we're like sandwiched at the very end between, I don't know, two gigantic games with way more money behind them. And just, you know, squeeze ourselves in there is pretty surreal.
Yeah. For me, it was going to Day of the Devs and having people play our games, which is an event in San Francisco hosted by Double Fine. Yeah. And just everyone there was very, very gracious and like very kind, and our build was super buggy and like not polished like to the degree that really we wanted. Mm-hmm. And the experience of making the game was like, and this is so much about art. Oh yeah, here's an example.
Yeah,
how we could reuse these assets in our trailer. But yeah, the experience of making any piece of art in my personal experience is that like you have such like high ambitions and like in your mind it's like, oh, this is gonna be so awesome,
right?
And then you sit down, and you actually try to make the thing, and there's constraints and there's limitations. And sometimes you figure out solutions that surprise you and that are better than what you had anticipated. But oftentimes, especially in game development, you know, there's just realities to like what a small team can do and what technically can be accomplished. And just also like your own creative limitations. Like, I'm not as good as I want to be. So showing someone like all our failures and all the, you know, make this the thing that isn't quite what I really had hoped it would be, or that I haven't had the time to put the work in, and then have people still be into it, even though I'm seeing all the faults and all the things, places we had to cut something, or all the places we spent a week debugging something and feeling really frustrated with it. Yeah, getting that reception from players was very meaningful.
There's an often pain point and reward when you put any product out there to be judged. And especially being in a bigger team where most of my career has been, you know, it's easy to kind of hide behind like the faults, right? It's like, oh, well, I mean, I'm one of 300 people. It's not my fault. But as an indie team, like you guys, you're the only one that could be blamed. Yeah. During development, I think it's very humble to kind of like take clothes in. So, yeah, the more critique, the better. We're making the game. We're fixing the game as the ultimate expression of, you know, all our experiences, right? And when it's out, like, I think that's the number one fear. It's like, all right, it's out. I'm exposed.
Yeah,
you
know,
people are either really like it or not. Like, what was that? Was that part of the preparation of press? Like, what was?
I mean, there's
bracing for that. Do you guys think about that?
There's only so many words someone can say to you to prepare you for that kind of thing. But I mean, yeah, it's like you put so much time into a thing, you're not prepared for any kind of emotional impact for everyone beholding it. And it's different from commercial work, because with commercial stuff, it's like, oh, it's, you know, no one cares about me making it. They only care about, oh, it's Nike. You know, Nike put up this ad. Okay, great. No one really cares. It's gone in like a month or whatever. But when you put out a game, it's like, oh, this is, it's like a baby that you birthed.
Yeah.
That's how much effort that you put into it.
Especially with our goals, where like, this is really an expression of our interests and our, you know, things that, like, we really want to, you know, find beautiful.
Yeah.
Interesting. So. Yeah, it was definitely difficult. It's like what I find really challenging is the fact that our relationship with what we've made is so fundamentally different from what anyone who's played the game, like, I have no idea what they experienced.
I'm incapable of enjoying it.
Yeah. Feels like. especially our game isn't really, it's not about like learning a mechanical skill and getting better at it and like developing mastery. I imagine developing those kinds of games, like, they can be a very like fulfilling process. But for us, like, our game is all about like just exploring and discovering where we, the authors, take you on this narrative. And we take you to some surprising, unexpected places. And when we first had those ideas, it'd be like, oh, it'd be so cool to see this. Like, throw you into the heart of a black hole.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I want to see that.
Yeah.
And we made that, and then we had to playtest it 300 times.
Like, I never want to see this again.
Yeah, and so there's nothing surprising. Like, I see people screenshot scenes, which I remember when I illustrated them, I was like, I remember feeling good about it, but now nothing about it is like, oh yeah, that is something I'm proud of, or I think it's beautiful. I'm just overexposed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, maybe in a decade, I'll look back at it and be like, all right.
Yeah.
That was okay. But for now.
But you guys are still able to enjoy that people are enjoying, right? That's that's some kind of a validation, of course, right?
Yeah. I enjoy the process more than the end result.
Yeah.
Like, personally, like, as the person who made it. And I'm very, very happy that people appreciate our garbage work. And we can do so much better. So, you know.
That's great.
We'll show them what a good game actually is.
That's true.
I'm terrified around English reviews.
How long were you guys able to kind of, because, you know, all the way to launch, you guys were working hard, even post-launch, it sounded like you guys, there was a lot of work involved with that.
Yeah.
When did you guys feel relaxed to be able to kind of even think about the second project? Or was that in your back of your minds already while you guys were close to shipping?
Yeah. I mean, we had ideas for next projects that were just like percolating, and I've been collecting inspiration and writing down ideas, but nothing, no real active prototyping or anything like that. I'd say it took us 4 months after release for us to debug all the stuff, to ship out all the Kickstarter rewards, to just decompress before. I don't know, personally, I feel like we had the same kind of like rhythm that I remember from the beginning of the project. But yeah, during that time we were working, but yeah, we tried to take it a little bit easier. Jeremy started teaching, so that was kind of like a way for you to
Take a break.
Use your brain in different ways.
Right.
I wanted to ask you guys this earlier, but I just remembered it. Right. So you guys are a duo, right? We're friends before this, so that helped. But I've seen so many cases where, you know, people kind of warn you, don't mix business with friends because it can go really bad. Obviously, you guys made it work, but we're, you know, there's obviously moments that you guys might butt heads. How did you guys work over that? And it sounds like there was never like a close encounter of a break.
I mean, I have too much stuff to work on to bother with holding a grudge. So I can be mad at you for like a day.
Yeah,
but that's about it. I don't have patience for anything longer than that.
No, same. Well, I think, yes, like rooming with someone, working with someone, it's going to really change your relationship, especially like I haven't spent as much time with Jerry.
Yeah, I mean, we don't hang out much.
I don't spend time like I spend with you, like with anyone else.
Yeah.
So it's just, we have a very fundamentally different relationship. I think, you know, if we weren't actively working on a project, we would revert back to our old, we'd still like to collaborate every now and then. But yeah, it's just, a lot of forgiveness. We trust each other. We both knew that this was kind of a project we really believed in.
Yeah.
So there was never like, oh, does Jeremy care about this as much as I do?
Right, no.
I think we both felt like we owned this. Mm-hmm. It was like a real synthesis of ourselves that we couldn't make individually.
Right.
That's, you know, it's tough, but also like very beautiful to kind of come together with, you know, someone that you really respect and make something.
To kind of throw on a toughness, you know, the pandy happened. I mean, you guys shipped right after, well, I mean, in the heart of it, it feels like March 2021, right? How did that, I mean, do anything to the development? Was that?
I mean, there was like a good 3 or 4 months right as it happened where you were at home and I was just in the studio.
Yeah.
And I was like very, very non-productive for like several months. And there wasn't a lot of communication because everyone was just like hunkering down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, beyond just, obviously everyone's mind was, we were in New York City.
Yeah.
So, like, I remember hearing sirens and like, or people, you know, banging pots and pans. And so like, I remember, just mentally paying more attention to the news than really was probably necessary.
Yeah, totally.
And I also really believe in sharing a workspace with someone and like being able to answer questions or just motivate each other. That definitely impacted. I think slowed us down during that period. But luckily, we weren't planning on having a social life.
Yeah.
So like for a time when we were just going to like commit to making a thing, it was a well-timed in that sense.
And this is one of my last questions, but it's my favorite one when I'm kind of talking to indie teams. There's obviously a lot of things you guys learn, right? You guys went through like a pandemic together too and shipped the game on time. Knowing that what you guys know now, do you think it's going to equip you better for the next project? And in what way exactly, specifically?
Absolutely.
What ways to improve it can be productive in your
product, really. Yeah. Just like, oh, I know how to build a game properly now. So like we just had so much technical debt in the first game, which is like the concept of, oh, you start making a thing and you don't know what you're doing, but you have to start with a scaffolding. The scaffolding you built is kind of crappy because you don't really know how to build one. So you're stuck on top of this rickety scaffolding for the rest of the project. Even when you know it could be better, you don't have the time or energy to change that. Mm-hmm. So now with this new project, we can, you know, take all those lessons that we learned and be like, oh, I didn't like this aspect of how we built the old game. Let's do it differently this time. Or these kinds of bugs are really hard to solve. Let's build a solution for that. So now we kind of know what parts we like the least about the process, and we can build solutions to those from the get-go.
Yeah. Also, just from narratively, the art side of it, we had never made a written a story,
yeah,
or like written characters
this long. Like we've done like 30-second, you know, TV stuff. But
yeah, well, I don't even think of those as characters. You know, they're iconographic,
right?
They're a caricature.
Yeah.
So, I think by the time we finished this game, we kind of really started to learn storytelling, and I'm really excited to tell to kind of synthesize the thing that we made, our Genesis Noir, and the strengths of that kind of our abstract storytelling, but kind of satisfy some of the more structural narrative kind of storytelling things that we didn't do quite as well with our next game, and try to, you know, just continue to refine and figure out that balance and find ways to inject characterization and plot and narrative into this kind of abstract framework.
I know you guys are not ready to announce it, but I just have a general question. Did you guys have an automatic in with your publisher for the second project? How early did they kind of tap you guys, seeing, you know, things were going well with Genesis Noir? Like,
yeah, I mean, it was that conversation kind of automatic.
Yeah.
Like, we just enjoyed working with them so much that we couldn't really imagine doing this project with someone else, at least.
Yeah. And I got the sense.
Did you have to go through the pitch the same way? What was different about the second game?
There was more trust, for sure. So, like, we knew what they wanted to see.
Yeah. And we didn't really have to show them much.
Yeah.
We showed them 3 or 4 ideas.
Yeah.
Which we were really excited about all of them. And they kind of gave us like this is like the natural next one, and then this would be a good follow-up. And so they gave us their input on, you know, some of them were just like wild.
Yeah.
It's like, how can we, it's a fun idea, but
we can't sell this.
This is going to be hard to sell. And we're like, yeah, we know.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do those at some point. But I don't think we would have been, we wouldn't have been successful in creating anything without our publisher. Mm-hmm. And then they also really pushed us to kind of take on this, like, controllers, make it run on lower end hardware and on Switch. And they brought it, you know, they helped us bring it to Xbox. So yeah, I think they definitely have earned their cut of any of our projects.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, it felt like a natural next step.
Awesome. Well, we just hit that hour mark. I want to thank you guys for spending an hour with me. Hopefully it was painless. That's my goal every time.
Those are great questions.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, you guys are great developers. I always look at you guys as the shining light. Because, you know, even the Pandy, you know, AAA developers are having the hardest time working independently. You know, you guys know firsthand what it's like to be remote and trustworthy. And so on the big scale, a lot of developers, even though, you know, our industry as a whole grew, a lot of people were struggling just trying to ship games and do things. And so smaller teams like you guys are always, to me, kind of are the innovators and basically showing what the industry is going to be like and what it should be to make creatives happy, right? The more we understand the full process of game development, the better we are as game developers. So when we do decide to kind of group together in a team of 300, right? We'd be like Sparta if we want to. Right now, I do see like huge disconnect with, even though they have all these releases, but you go to the biggest publisher, the biggest game, and talk to that developer, they don't understand the process from beginning to end. And I think that that eventually does hurt the industry. So what you guys are doing is very inspirational. I do want to kind of shut up at this point to kind of hand the mic over to you guys to tell the good people how to find you guys, you know, and everything, how to kind of keep updated for your next project and go out to buy Genesis Noir where they can get all the info. Cool.
So it's on Steam, Xbox, Game Pass on both PC and Xbox One. It's on Switch, it's on Windows and Mac. We just released some free DLC content several months ago.
And you can find us on Twitter.
Yep.
And
at Genesis Noir Games.
Instagram. We're still throwing up things now and then, but we're pretty quiet. I think we'll start, you know, we'll be quiet for a while.
Yeah.
But we're really excited to show what our next stuff, because I think, you know, if you enjoyed our first project, then I think you'll be interested in our next. And thank you for giving us this platform
and for sure.
Asking such thought-provoking questions. And
thanks so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime you guys want to come back, we'll be glad to have you guys and talk about everything. That's it, guys. See you guys all next week.